LegalizeFreedom.com. Why are we here? Where do we come from? Where are we going? From the nature of reality to the future of humanity. Listen without limits. Unchain your brain. Change your thinking. Change your life. LegalizeFreedom.com.
Greetings and welcome once again to LegalizeFreedom.com. I'm your host, Greg Moffat, and my guest today is Richard Kretz, who joins us to discuss the solar eclipse of 2024. Although easily explained in astronomical terms, solar eclipses have inspired fear and awe in humanity since the dawn of time. Hardly surprising, then, that the recent eclipse of April 8th, 2024, triggered a widespread surge in speculation and doom-mongering. For thousands of years, however, correlations have been observed between celestial events and those on Earth, particularly in the realm of human affairs. Today, this is the sphere of astrology, although there was a time when astronomy and astrology were one and the same. Taking the 2024 eclipse as a starting point, we explore evolution, the origin of life, the existence of extraterrestrials, auguries in the turbulent events of today, and the potential dawning of a new age. Hello and welcome, Richard, and thank you so much for joining us once again on LegalizeFreedom.com.
Well, thank you, Greg. It's a privilege and a pleasure to be here.
Excellent. Okay, so today, Richard, we're talking a little bit about the recent solar eclipse, indeed, so that those sort of astronomical phenomena in general. Lots of avenues of discussion and speculation will be going down. But before we dive into that, for listeners who don't know, just tell them a little bit about your background and your work in general.
All right. Last year, I had my first book released. It's titled The Alchemical Search for the Unified Field. And it's about alchemy and the Philosopher's Stone. And it includes some shamanism. As far as my background is concerned, I've got a lifetime worth of experience with the occult ever since I was a little kid. And in the 70s, I studied, various types of meditation, specifically transcendental meditation. I progressed from there. So I'm well versed both in hermetics, in the Vedic sciences, and shamanism. I spent 3 years on a mountain with a shaman. I've also, as a result, have an interest in astronomy and astrology and the various topics that go along with that. So that, with the idea that we had this total solar eclipse coming across the United States, it piqued my interest. And then I also had seen a documentary fairly recently put out by the History Channel titled The Last Pope, that posed the idea that Pope Francis might be the last pope and possibly the end of the church. So I decided to take a look at that. Now, I'm not a prognosticator or a seer or anything of that nature. I was just curious to see, was there anything in the stars that might suggest anything along the line that, this documentary, suggested? So that's where we're at.
Yeah, just before we started, we were discussing the run-up to the recent eclipse and the online, social media speculation, a lot of heated opinion, quite polarized, the usual apocalyptic speculation, predictions and whatnot that you get around these sorts of cosmic events, even things as almost routine as solar and lunar eclipses, And on the other hand, people being incredibly dismissive and just saying, you know, in fact, this is the moon moving in front of the sun. They happen to line up for a short time. It goes dark. End of story. And what we're trying to do today is walk maybe a middle line. You mentioned astronomy, of course, and then there's into astrology and the nature of coincidence, which after all is coincidence. It's incidents happening at the same time. And then is there any sort of read into that as to where? But there was a time, of course, when astronomy and astrology, where it was really part of the same cosmology, the same worldview, the way that that human beings saw the skies, you know, events, things that they could track, patterns. For ancient peoples, these were imbued with meaning as all of nature and the wider reality was. So that's what we're trying to do today, which is saying, yes, it has got simple, you know, in terms of celestial mechanics, sort of relatively simple explanations, but without just ascribing things to it with, you know, no basis in any kind of meaning at all or any, you know, evidence, is there something to this? And I think if anyone's listened to any of the shows that I've done on astrology and whether they were coming to that very skeptically and seen it broken down, then there is a correlation. There are correlations and patterns connecting events in the heavens, movements of stars and planets, and over time, particularly over long periods of time, with events on Earth, shall we say, with how the natural, how life on Earth is affected. And these correlations have been observed over such a long period of time that it wouldn't be scientific to just dismiss it outright.
Okay, yeah, that's a good introductory there. The way that the ancients looked at things, it was very nature-based. So they were trying to figure out, okay, how do I fit into this broader scheme of things of nature and the universe? So they were constantly looking, you know, to the heavens to see, okay, well, here I am on Earth, you know. So how does that relate to what's going on, you know, celestially up in, you know, with the stars and the planets and all that? You know, it, to them, it must mean something. And they were able to see a lot of it reflected here on Earth through the cycles of nature, you know, through the four seasons and things. So they were able to develop some analogies. And one of the analogies that they saw was with this total solar eclipse. To them, it could be often a very frightening experience because they didn't understand it. All they know is that for whatever reason, you know, it was getting dark in the middle of the day. You know, things were changing. You know, the animals were going to bed, the birds stopped singing, and it was kind of frightening. In line with that, you know, they said, well, it must have some meaning. And in their worldview, the sun was very considered masculine. And in many cultures today, we find that, you know, the sun is a masculine reference. And the moon is reflecting the light of the sun, and it was considered as feminine. So when we have a total solar eclipse, what they were perceiving through their worldview of nature and the universe is that as the moon, and it is always a new moon during a total solar eclipse, as it was passing in front of the sun, it, to their minds, equated to a marriage. The union of opposites. And from an occult perspective, it would be considered an alchemical marriage. And as a result of that, as the moon and the sun joined when the eclipse peaked, then the earth was born out of that. So you have the sun as the father in heaven, you have the moon as the mother, and then the earth as the child. So we have the formation of our first trinity, which was sun, moon, and earth.
Yeah, well, as you say, it's like, I think it's our natural way of being as humans to, we talk about humans being engaged in pattern recognition. We look for patterns in the world and the environment around us. And so it seems that in the past, and for the longest time, for the vast majority of human history, that the patterns and cycles, whether they be, just in the day-to-day world around us in nature or in the heavens, have taken on, a certain meaning. Whether they actually have, a purpose or not is another matter. And everything was seen as interconnected, which I think is very important, which it is, and which is actually a very scientific way of looking at things. Quantum science is revealing this to us, that what we're looking at on the Earth and in the solar system, the galaxy, the wider cosmos is one system. A push on one object moves something else, wherever it happens to be, however far away in space and time. So, but this modern science, since the scientific revolution, has been about atomizing things, breaking them down, in many cases literally dissecting them, to see how they work. And this is where this mechanistic God as a clockmaker kind of view came from. So I think that looking at whatever, whether the recent eclipse or not, or just world events in general, as part of a greater totality, like a one system, whatever your worldview happens to be, whether it is purely someone might think of as a rationalistic and scientific, that still has an impact. If all things are connected, that will affect how that functions from a scientific perspective or a spiritual perspective, or any other. So I think that's relating to the situation we're talking about. I think that it's a rather myopic view in the modern era that we have of living systems. I see whether they be in the heavens or on the earth, has been a great loss, and we've learned a lot from dissecting things and looking at them under microscopes. But then we lost that holistic picture, and any attempt to couch things in those terms now is seen as, well, it's almost pseudo-religious in a way. It's resisted tremendously in the modern era. The spiritual ideas, that becomes religion. It makes or kind of opens the back door for God, as it were. And despite recent movements, say in the second half of the, well, we've had 100 years of quantum science, haven't we? And still, those ideas haven't been integrated into to life and our view of ourselves and our place in the cosmos. It's still very much like, oh, well, that's interesting, but what's it got to do with day-to-day life?
Well, exactly. And really what this comes down to, Greg, is regardless of how we parse it, it comes down to the cycles of nature and the cycles of the universe. It's the microcosm within the macrocosm. Now, what do I mean by that? It's that the cycles, regardless of whether it's a microcosm or a macrocosm, it equates to very simple formula, and that is it's birth and existence or life, as you however you wish to term it. So we've got birth and existence, and then there's death. And following death, there is a rebirth. So when we're looking at these cycles, it's not just alpha and omega. That would be a linear perspective. So what we're looking at as a cycle, because it's birth, life, death, and rebirth, is one that involves alpha, omega, alpha. So we have a beginning, an end, and then rebirth. And that's something, a concept that has been lost, but it has been, I think, pursued, as you were mentioning, through quantum science, and it plays a significant role in what we're learning about the universe. And the ancients, they saw it, and one of the things, and I'm sure that we're going to touch on it here momentarily, but I'll dive into it now, if that's okay with you. And that regards Orion. And the reason I would like to go ahead and touch on that is it provides perspective of the ancient worldview. And it's in line with what occurs during a solar eclipse. as we are in the Northern Hemisphere right now, Orion plays a very important role, even in today's world, but most certainly in the ancient world. I mean, we can find, you know, the pyramids on the Giza Plateau that are aligned to Orion. The pyramids in Teotihuacan down in Mexico are aligned to Orion. The same holds true over in Asia, various complexes. So Orion was very significant. And we ask ourselves, well, why was that? Well, when we look to the heavens at night and we see the constellation, or actually it's an asterism of Orion up there, we perceive him as a man that is standing up there in the heavens. And the way this works, as far as the cycles are concerned that we just touched on, is that in late August, we begin to see Orion rise in the east just before sunrise. He is considered born on his back on the fall equinox. So on the fall equinox, Orion is born. And over the next couple of months, he begins to grow. He rises until on winter solstice on December 21st. He stands in the southern sky at about midnight as an upright man. And then he will continue to, he's not really growing anymore. He begins to die, and he continues to rotate until he is face down in the west at about sunset on the spring equinox. Well, then after that, you know, he's dead and he would be buried. So as we move to the summer solstice in June, we don't see him in the northern hemisphere anymore because he's buried. But he's not gone. He comes back again. He's reborn again the following fall equinox. So to the ancient mind, because they were nature-based, they were constantly looking to the heavens to say, okay, well, you know, as above, what's going on up in the heavens must be going on down here on Earth. And to their mind, as they watched Orion in his annual cycle of being born, of living, of dying, and then being reborn, you know, that, you know, made a lot of sense to them. So, and that goes with other cycles of nature, you know, as far as, you know, things being born in the spring, you know, maturing during the summer, and then they begin to fade by the fall until the winter when they're gone. Then they come back again in the spring. So everything is a cycle of birth, life, death, and rebirth.
I wonder what the ancients thought they were looking at when they saw the lights in the sky, the stars and the planets, before they started to think about them as kind of bodies in a way, you know, before there was any suggestion that they might be looking at a piece of rock or a ball of gas or any of that. I wondered physically what they thought they were looking at.
Well, that's an interesting question, because they didn't have, you know, this idea, oh, that it might, you know, what a star was. It was just this twinkling light, you know, that they could see in the distance. And then they, you know, during the course of an evening, you know, it appeared to move across the sky, you know, and the same with the sun and with the moon. You know, that's why we have this idea of Apollo riding in a chariot, you know, across the sky from east to west, you know. So they didn't understand those things. And then I believe you had mentioned it earlier, you know, when they're looking at the stars and they studied them intently, because, you know, there's really not much else to do at night back then. There were no cell phones or computers, and certainly no television. So, you know, they began to envision, you know, various animal, you know, clusters of stars. You know, they could say, well, you know, if we draw a line from this star to that star and so forth, to us, it looks like possibly a man, as in the case of Orion. It might look like a ladle or a dipper, what we're seeing with the big and small dippers, or a rabbit or a serpent, a bear, and then they would create all these mythologies that would accompany that, to rationalize these patterns that they were recognizing in the sky. And that goes way back to ancient Sumeria, that they were doing that. That was what, roughly 6,000 BC or thereabouts. So, I mean, since time immemorial, this is something that, man has done.
Well, when I first got interested in astrology, it was in the 1980s. The mainstream view of it was just, one of ridicule and derision, because what astrology meant to most people, if anything at all, was a horoscope in a magazine or a tabloid newspaper. The little two-paragraph thing telling you about the near future in your life, and usually in very broad terms. But I wanted to know, well, this sounds like nonsense, but what's it based on? What is astrology? As I started to look into it, I immediately tied it in my own mind with astronomy. Well, because I thought to myself, okay, well, I've been learning about the effects, for example, of cosmic rays and radiation on life on Earth, forces, energies, fields beyond the Earth that impact the Earth, that pass across it and through it. Cosmic rays, the Earth's been bombarded with them constantly. They penetrate right to the core of the Earth and pass through our bodies. Whatever scale you look at, whether it's the Earth and the other planets orbiting around our sun, or whether our entire solar system in its multi-hundred thousand year journey around the galactic center, these planetary bodies, the Earth included, are passing through areas that have different properties, let's say in terms of cosmic rays and radiation. That has a physical impact on life. Part of life is our brains, whatever consciousnesses, our minds are affected by these forces. So you could see over the very long term, certainly in human terms, how life on Earth could be affected. Human thinking and evolution could be affected by very concrete kinetic forces. So I thought to myself, well, maybe this is where astrology comes from, just looking for patterns within all of that and interpreting it. So I always thought that on that basis, astrology could have a very, very real basis, in physical forces.
Well, absolutely. To the ancient mind, they didn't separate astronomy from astrology. To their mind, it was one and the same. And you're correct, with these cosmic forces, whether it's the various energies that are being emitted regarding positions of planets and stars or the constellations, they're electromagnetic forces, their gravitational forces. And I think that something that is often overlooked and not considered, that Pythagoras pointed out, is their vibrational, their musical qualities. All of these things, as you've noted, impact the human psyche, but they impact not just humanity. I think they impact all of life on this planet. So, when we're looking at these different alignments, we're looking at, variations in frequencies, variations in the effect of gravitational pull, and all of these other, electromagnetic forces, cosmic rays, the whole nine yards. All these movements and relationships have an impact. So, in that regard, I think, from a scientific perspective, there must be some validity to astrology, even though we haven't been able to really count for it as of yet. It's a suspicion that, yes, we can say, yeah, these alignments, do certain things, have certain impacts on us. We just haven't been able to really nail down precisely or specifically what it is that is having this effect on us. The ancients knew it, even though they couldn't, describe it either.
Well, maybe we never will understand it. I mean, that's a very modern idea, isn't it? The idea that everything's explainable, particularly in scientific terms. And that's why so many ideas are dismissed, including astrology, because it's unscientific, quote unquote, as if science is the only way of gleaning knowledge. It's one way of doing it, it's not the only way. Science isn't nothing, but equally, it's not everything. So I think that tendency
Well,
to write things off because they can't be explained in narrow scientific terms is very narrow-minded. And also, if it then dismisses a subject as a valid area of inquiry, well, of course, you're not going to explain it if no one's studying it.
yeah, exactly. And I like the analogy that I found in the movie Forrest Gump, for example. At the beginning of the movie, Forrest is sitting on the bench next to this nurse, and he points at her shoes, and he says, "My mama told me that you can learn a lot about a person from their shoes, where they've been and where they've gone or are going." And then he goes into thing about life is like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get. Well, my take on, astrology is that when it comes to foretelling the future, it's like a box of chocolates. We might have an idea of what the future may hold, but we really don't know what we're going to get.
Yeah, and what I would say for listeners who perhaps have been skeptical about astrology but are still with us is first port of call, have a look at, your work in this area. For example, I don't know if the paper that we mentioned earlier that you sent me is available at your website or not, but and I've got lots of interviews at legalizedfreedom.com, not least those with Bruce Schofield, John Michael Greer. Great insights on this. And also, although I haven't spoken with them, I've got a lot of time for Stephen Forrest and Richard Tarnas. I mean, go and find his online look at 2024, which he released around about Christmas New Year, and it's fascinating. You'll see it's really very far from to name a popular 1980s quote unquote astrologer in British newspapers, Mystic Meg, who'd make pronunciations about people's love lives, etc. It's so far away from anything like that. It really is, in its own way, if you want to use the word scientific, it is rigorous.
Yes, it is. And I've seen the videos of some of those that you have interviewed on this matter, and they're excellent interviews, and I would encourage your listeners to go back into your archives and take a listen at them, because there's a lot of very, very good information from these extraordinarily knowledgeable folks.
Is the paper actually available at your website, by the way, the one you shared with me?
Okay, paper itself is not available. However, on my website, which I've recently updated, if you go to the page that says videos on it, you will find that there is a video titled "The Age of the Yeah the Dawning of the Age of Aquarius," which is the title of the paper. And there is a present, so I've actually done a video presentation of the paper. So you're welcome to enjoy that. And you'll find it to be quite informal, excuse me, informative. It goes into pretty good detail and depth about what, the solar eclipses really mean, and how are they going to affect us today, and what we might expect going into the future to, for example, the total solar eclipse that's going to be on March 20th, 2034, which everything seems to suggest that that will be the dawning of the age of Aquarius for a number of reasons, which I don't know if we're going to discuss those, this afternoon or not,
We
but
are,
it's
yes.
quite intriguing.
Yeah, we will get to the seven ages of man shortly. We certainly don't have time to explore them all in depth because it's the entirety of human existence up to this point. But in any event, I'll link to the video you just mentioned on the interview page for this, so listeners will be able to go directly there. And then obviously once they're at the video, they can navigate to the rest of your website. Okay, so before we get to the seven ages of man, I just wanted to take a little detour into kind of the ancient earth and ancient humanity. You do reference in the paper the idea of knowledge coming from elsewhere. We get into talking about the Anunnaki, extraterrestrial life, all of that, which again is another fascinating area and not necessarily immediately relevant to what we're talking about, but of course it is. The idea of whether it's from, you know, the biblical ideas of God, or biblical interpretations of entities, other life forms, just knowledge coming from beyond the earth, but not limited to just interpretations of heavenly movements, but actually a direct interaction. Those, like the flood myths, are ubiquitous throughout all human cultures, going back beyond, they're prehistoric, basically. They've always been there. So perhaps you could say something about that, because we also have the question of, in all of this, what is the ultimate question of the origin of life on Earth itself? That concludes part one of our interview. Part two will be available soon in the subscribers area at legalizefreedom.com.
Legalizefreedom.com.